This is Dawn from Plainfield, and this episode is brought to you by Ivy Envy Patreon supporters like me. If you love the Cubs, beer, strong marginal analysis, internet muscle flexes, and the occasional chicken, this is the podcast for you. Go Cubs!
Hi, and thanks for downloading this episode of the IVMV podcast. On this episode, we're talking about the first two games of the Cubs-Cardinals NLDS series, one of which we were in attendance, and we will preview Game 3. I'm one of your co-hosts. My name is Corey, and I'm joined by the other two hosts of this podcast, Through the Blabs.
What's up? Coming straight to you from college. This is Andy.
And this is a very tired Kurt.
Oh, man. I've not recovered from yesterday.
No, but I'm still very happy.
I've not emotionally recovered from yesterday. I'm still a little bit on edge, and that, and then like the first part of the day, like my stomach was still just kind of settling down, and then tonight I'm starting to get the anxiety about tomorrow's game. So
I gotta tell you guys, that may have been my top sporting experience ever.
Oh, I am 100% with you. It was the most fun, the most like exhilarating, like the up and down of the sort of like anxiety pregame, all that stuff. Like, yeah, I'm absolutely with you. It was the best, most exciting sporting event I've experienced.
Well, and it had like that. I mean, if you've been to, I've been to Notre Dame football games that I've kind of almost had that same type of like anxiety when I'm there. I've seen some close games, and actually saw Jeff Samardzija score a winning touchdown with like 20 seconds left at a game. So, I mean, that, like, I've experienced that kind of like thrill and that rush, but normally that's not something that you experience with baseball, you know, especially because we've never even been to a postseason. Like, that was the first postseason game I've ever been to. And to have that like tension, like real tension throughout the whole game in a game that you could argue was a must win game for the Cubs. And it was, I don't know. It was amazing. And Lauren says that she legitimately thought she was going to puke. I honestly was like coming up with like my game plan, like our era in like the eighth and ninth inning. I was like, I'm seriously going to barf. And
so that's why you grab the cards towel,
right?
The rally towel.
So it was so awesome.
The stakes were high. The atmosphere was electric.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've seen, okay. And this, everybody in the chat's going to love this, but I've been to Nebraska winning a national championship before over Tennessee and Peyton Manning. And that was pretty fantastic. But so I don't know, maybe top two sporting event experiences I've ever had.
Yeah.
See, I've never been to any kind of playoff or championship event. So my bar is pretty low. But at the same time, even if I had been to something amazing, I think.
Yeah.
It would have still surpassed it. It was incredible. And plus, I mean, you know, not to get too sappy with you, but like the fact that we could all three be there together,
right,
was pretty amazing too.
Yeah, that was cool. I mean, that was only, we've only been to, other than the bus trip, we'd only been to the one game like 3 weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago. That was the first time we'd ever gone not on the bus trip, the three of us. So yeah, to go to see a playoff game was awesome. But before we get into all of the game two stuff, let's look at game one first. And I have to admit, I found game one really frustrating. I hated seeing them drop the first game of the series with the long layoff that the Cardinals had and waiting, from Sunday until Friday. And as poor as they were playing going into the, they got swept to end the season. I thought it could be huge for the series if the Cubs went into their house against their number one starter for this round of the playoffs, Lackey, and just continue the winning streak. And at the time, it looked like that was the more favorable matchup for the Cubs as far as pitching goes. So I was really frustrated with game one.
Yeah, I really thought the Cubs could get to Lackey. And then when he was no-hitting them through five, was it, or six? I can't remember. Mm-hmm. Man, that was a big time downer. And yeah, it was because we weren't there. Somebody in the chat. Well,
not only was I not there, but we had a wedding to go to. It was one of those where, you know, it was like, it's a wedding you can't get out of. It's a pretty close friend of my wife. So I didn't see any of it. I was watching it on the little game day app on my phone underneath a table.
Were you like pacing?
In a commercial, you know, those commercials where you see the dude like looking at his phone the whole time. That was me. So it was not much of an experience for me. I got more out of the text from you guys than I did out of game day. But so I probably don't have a lot of insight on game one.
But still, I mean, they had a few great chances. I think it was Addison Russell got on base in the sixth inning and he stole a bag. I think he ended up on third somehow. I don't remember how it happened. Lester grounded out. And then Fowler almost hit a homer. I mean, it was right at the top of the fence.
I have no idea how that thing stayed in.
I know. And he hit it so high, I think that's how it stayed in. I mean, he even kind of did a home run pose a little bit after he hit it because he killed that ball. It just went so high that its trajectory didn't quite take it over.
And at the time, it was 1-0, right? I think it was 1-0 at that time, I believe.
In the sixth inning, I'm not sure about that. But
it's kind of funny because after being there for game two, like game one is kind of hard for me to recall. I took in so much everything. Like it just pushed game one like right out of my head.
But yeah, I mean, that was a big moment. I think that could have changed the entire complexion of the game had that ball just gone out. Obviously, Lackey would have left the game a little bit sooner and, you know, momentum and all that kind of stuff. So I thought that was a big moment from that game. Plus, I wanted to bring up Lester's performance, which I thought was pretty darn good. He was charged with 3 earned runs, and it should have been 2, really. He left with a runner on first base, and that run ended up scoring on the 2-run home run given up by Strope. So I thought Lester pitched well. I was excited to see that. I think that bodes well for if he has to go out there coming up here in one of the upcoming games.
Right.
It did seem like a kind of, this is pretty much anecdotal, but a repeat of how Lester's season went. Like he would pitch really well for 6, 7, 8 innings, but not get a lot of run support. And then sort of late innings, the wheels would fall off either him or the bullpen. And it also was almost a duplicate to the Lester Lackey matchup from the regular season where they both went really strong into like 6th or 7th inning. And then the Cubs gave up runs. So yeah, I think it's good that you point out, like, you know, people probably get down on Lester, but the fact is he pitched really well. You know, don't let Arrieta spoil your reality of what good pitching is, you know.
Right. Yeah.
As for Strope, you know what I'd like to see is if, you know, say I could see the Cubs having a comfortable lead tomorrow, honestly, in game 3. And if they end up having a comfortable lead, you know, late in the game, I would love to see Strope go out there and work a scoreless inning against the Cards. And Corey's shaking his head. Why not? They're going to need this guy for the postseason.
You're absolutely
great
right
for them all year. Right. It'd be a great time for him to go out there and shake that performance off.
I agree. Costas has something to say.
Right. I agree with you 100%. I like Strope so much, but I'm just okay with not seeing him against the Cardinals for the rest of this season. And I think they just have his number. They have him figured out. They've obviously hacked into some freaking system and found the book on him because they have his number. And so, like, I love Strope, and if the Cubs move on to the NLCS, I'm all for using him because I think he's really good. But I just don't – there's 3 games left potentially three games left, as many as three games left with the Cardinals, I just don't think we need to use him because they have.
What if he could go out there and come off clean, though? I mean, wouldn't that make him feel ironclad for the rest of the playoffs?
Here's why I would maybe agree with you. I would maybe agree with you in a game three or game four at Wrigley. I don't want to see him pitch in St. Louis again.
Yeah, I'm cool with that. I just think like at Wrigley in game three or four, if the Cubs do have a decent lead, why not put him out there and, you know, let him get a feel good clean outing?
I would say if they have a lead, a decent lead, I'd be with you. But
go ahead, Kurt.
Well, I was just gonna say, like, given how Cahill pitched yesterday, I don't think he got worked too much. I want to say he just went like one inning, right? But he might be a guy to go to. I think you just said you have other options. Given that he doesn't look good on paper versus the Cardinals.
Well, and I think they have other options, and they have other options that haven't pitched in a week. So, I mean, I think that some other guys could maybe use a little bit of work. But
sure.
But to be honest, like, Joe Maddon knows whether it's going to be right to use him or not. And so that's where, like,
I haven't seen Rodney in a while either, like you said.
Right, yeah. It just seems like there's a lot of bullpen arms that have not pitched in a long time.
Yeah, so that's true. And then given what we saw last night from the bullpen, you're going to want to see those guys out there again.
Yeah, I really trust Joe and his matchups. Like, he just kind of seems to come out on top a lot of the time, most of the time, if not all the time. So I really just kind of, I don't know, whatever Joe decides to go with, I endorse that.
Yeah. But, you know, the more I think about it, though, the more I agree with Andy. Like, if they get a lead, it might be a good time to put him out there because, like you said, they are going to, if they advance, they're going to need him to have, like, you don't want him going out there in the NLCS having not worked
in
a while.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Anything else?
But anyway.
One thing I want to bring up with game one is the strikeout or the strike zone, obviously. And really my kind of after processing it, and I rode down to St. Louis with Bob from Moline yesterday. And I would say probably almost our entire drive to St. Louis was talking about that strike zone and basically what we decided on was that Lackey just took advantage. It was obvious that the strike zone was huge, and really, you could make the case that it was maybe a little bit bigger for the Cardinals, or, you know, for Lackey. But either way, it was a big strike zone, and it was especially high. And Lackey was going up. You know, he was going upstairs, and he was taking advantage of that. And that's not really Lester's style, and so he wasn't getting some of those calls, you know, because he's not going to do that very often. So you kind of look at it and it's like, well, you can't. I think that's one of the reasons that Lester or that Lackey looked so dominant was that he was throwing balls and they were getting called strikes. And I think Taylor brings up a good point in the chat that the TBS strike zone is wonky, and it definitely is. It is
off.
It is really hard to even to, like, I was watching, I went back and watched some of last night's game this morning. I wanted to see different parts of the game, and I don't know if it's the angle. I don't know what it is, but it is off. But I think on one hand, it's like, Lackey is, what is he, 37 years old or something like that, and he's experienced enough to know that when a couple of those pitches were getting called strikes, that's where he was going, and that's what he went after.
Well, and I think there's
pitcher's going to do that.
Well, I think there's two ways to look at that. Was he just getting balls called strikes, or was he recognizing that he had a bigger strike zone and throwing with control to those spots? I think that's two different scenarios, and I think it was the latter. I think he figured out he had a bigger zone and worked it to his advantage.
Yeah. And that's where you had young batters coming in that really weren't, they weren't adapting to that real quick, you know? And I mean, you looked at, like, I think it wasn't in the ninth inning when Bryant worked a full count and then struck out on a called strike three. I think the Cubs had, four times that they were called out on
That kind of a strike zone really hurts the Cubs. I mean, that's a big part of their game, is having discipline at bats. Being able to lay off pitches that are borderline is a big part of what they do. And so for the strike zone to be like that really hurt the Cubs, like their identity wasn't able to deal with that.
Right, especially when they're that young and they're seeing a ball come in and they think, oh, nope, that's a ball. I'm going to lay off of it. You know, a more experienced hitter might be able to, you know, and I was talking about this with Bob because I said so much, you know, there's like just split second instincts when it comes to swinging a bat. And if you're young and your instincts are telling you, no, that's a ball, don't swing at it. Even if you know, okay, they've expanded the strike zone, I might need to protect it a little bit. It's younger players, I think, are going to struggle with that.
Well, and Madden, I think, said in the post game that even though the big strike zone may not have led to more strikeouts, it did lead. They recognized it at some point, and they're like, okay, we got a bigger zone. Mm-hmm. And then when they try to adjust, that means they're swinging at pitches they wouldn't normally swing at, which means weaker contact and more outs, whether they be strikeouts or not. So, yeah, it affects, like you said, it just affects the whole game plan.
Right.
It can throw you off.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to game two. We were fortunate enough to go to this game. As I said, Bob from Moline and I went up early. We hung out with Lauren, who's in the chat, and Michael from Galesburg, and Lawrence, his co-host on the Awesome 80s podcast. It was nice hanging out with them. We went to the Flying Saucer, which if you're ever at a Cardinals game, I would highly recommend that place. They had tons of good beer. The food was good. And it's just like a few blocks from Busch Stadium, and it's away from like the chaotic, what are the
Cardinal Village?
Yeah, whatever that place is, Ballpark Village. It's away from that. And so it was really nice. I liked it a lot. But the day was so much fun, and I don't really know where to start. So maybe we should start off by talking about our interactions with baseball's best fans. Is that a good place to start?
I would start with one positive, and that like the ushers or the sort of professionals around Busch Stadium were pretty fantastic. One guy was trying to help us find the best standing room spots. I mean, they were really nice, and we could tell it was intentional. It was almost as if they had been trained, like, hey, let's be really nice to the Cardinals or the Cubs fans because whatever, you know, let's represent St. Louis. It was rah rah. But those people were like, you know, ages 60 and up.
Right.
But that said, of course, then there's the actual fans themselves.
Which, okay, so let's start off with some positive interactions.
Sure, we had at least two positive experiences.
I can remember two. The first one was I was standing there and I felt somebody tap me on the back. And I was like, oh boy. Well, and this is after like we had kind of walked around the ballpark trying to find something. And we'd had kind of, you know, I guess you would call it a homophobic slur hurled at us after we had, of course, passed these guys because they wouldn't say it to us as we were coming up on. Not that we're like intimidating guys or anything, but, you know, it's that well, nice, I mean, like, Bob, oh, you're walking.
Bob has quite a.
I don't think he was with us.
He wasn't with us.
Oh, he wasn't?
No. So, but anyways, I feel somebody tap on me and I turned around. And it was like this older lady, you know, she was probably in her 60s, and she was like, oh, welcome to St. Louis. Welcome. I was like, oh, thank you.
We're going to punch her.
I know. She was like, kind of like, I don't know, the live viewers can see the motion. She was kind of like easing away from me. And I was like, oh, thank you. You know,
it almost felt like she was going to hand you a plate of brownies or something.
Yeah.
And like, welcome to the neighborhood.
No, she was really nice, though.
Here's your snickerdoodles.
And then I'll let one of you guys tell about the other positive interaction that we had.
I don't remember it.
So it was at the end.
Well, I don't really remember exactly what the guy said, but he came up and basically said congratulations to the Cubs. And he was talking about how it's so awesome that there's, you know, three really strong teams in the NL Central. And he's happy for the Cubs to actually be playing well. And what else did he say, Corey?
Well, he shook each one of our hands. He was like, congratulations, you know, and he was like, and it was kind of,
it was, I must not have been there for that.
Oh, you might have gone to the restroom, but it was kind of intimidating. Cause like, I mean, he was a pretty strong, like tattooed guy. So when he came up and I was like, okay, this is a setup. I'm like looking around behind it like, okay, somebody's going to blindside us.
Am I wrong in thinking that it almost looked like he had tears in his eyes?
Yeah, it kind of did. You're right. Yeah.
He seemed like kind of emotional, but he was like, I don't know. It was bizarre. I mean, he was really nice, but he was just talking about how these are the kind of teams that are exciting and that are doing it the right way. You know, teams building with strong farm systems and achieving success through strong farm systems. And so that's why he was so excited for to see the Cubs, Cards, and Pirates this season is because he saw those teams as doing it, you know, achieving success the right way. And
yeah.
It was in it.
A couple of right ways in there.
Yeah,
you may have met the only like knowledgeable, nice.
And Jonah asks in the chat if he was being fake. He wasn't at all.
I don't think so. No. Yeah.
At first, I thought maybe he was, but I mean, he was very nice, and it wasn't like he just kind of was like, oh, congratulations, guys, and took off. Like he stood there and talked with us
kind
for
of
a
talked
while.
Baseball with us for a few minutes. Yeah.
Yeah, it was cool. And then
were the two good ones. Now, if we're gonna get into the bad interactions, there were some, I don't know, just dunce Cubs fans around us too.
There was.
We're gonna be honest, as many dunce Cubs fans as there were.
Well, things didn't start off well. Bob and I got out of our car and started walking that direction. We were there pretty early, and as soon as we got out of our parking lot and started walking on the street, someone honked and flipped us off. And when he flipped us off, he had a lot of big jewelry on, and I believe his finger had one of the replica Cardinals World Series rings. I'm not positive, but it looked like it.
It wouldn't surprise me.
You run up to the car window and bite the finger off.
Spit it out on concrete.
And I was just like, all right, this is gonna be a fun day. I mean,
we didn't have any harassment until probably game time, I would say. Our group, a little group, me and Andy and Andy's wife. So I fully expected it to start out badly, so I was like kind of looking over my shoulder the whole time, but it was pretty tame until game time. But
so I wrote out, I wanted to make sure I got this conversation right, from the most obnoxious Cardinals fan that was around us, and so this is how it goes. He says, Cubs fans are the most ignorant fans. They don't know anything about baseball. Cubs fans are just ignorant. At which point, Andy turns around and says, quote, I just want to let you know that I really disagree with you. Andy really getting up in his face. Sir, I disagree with that statement.
I remember it differently. That I thought you said that when they were talking about the Molinas.
Yeah, well, I said something like that because one of the dumb Cubs fans said Yadi is the third best Molina. Right, and that prompted all of them to be like,
that's like,
oh, Cubs fans are idiots and ignorant and stuff like that. And I just turned to him and was like, for the record, I don't agree with that.
He's the second best.
Okay, so what happens is
Benji is the best, obviously.
Right. So after he's talking about how Cubs fans are so ignorant and everything like that, so this other kind of obnoxious Cubs fan, he says, oh, listen to that entitlement. He's like, Cardinals fans have such a sense of entitlement. And then the Cardinals fan says, that entitlement is earned. In which case, I turned around and said, oh, are you a former player? Thinking, if you earned this entitlement, you must be a player. And then he says to me, are those glasses for real, or are you being cute?
Are you trying to look cute? Yeah.
And then Corey's response was, hey, did you hear that? He just called me cute. Or he thinks I'm cute.
And then he didn't really respond to that part, though.
No.
But yeah, that guy, you could tell, he was there intentionally. We probably had, 10, 15 Cubs fans like in a little pocket by us.
Right.
He walked right into the center of us. And honestly, the obnoxious Cubs fans we're talking about, these were big guys. Like, I mean.
Right, these were like muscle guys.
Yeah, and he walks right in the middle, stands right in the middle. Not a big guy, and just starts talking crap. Yeah, right in the middle
of it.
With the intention of getting under our skin.
My favorite thing was when Solaire thought he drew a lock and he started running, and the guy was
maybe hold on. We should do the disclaimer. If there's any kids listening right now,
what the word starts
with. I think we need to say the words for full. Yeah. So if kids are listening, fast forward like 2 minutes.
Well, what did he exactly say? I mean, he called Solaire a pussy.
Right. He was like, Solaire flipped his bat thinking he had a walk. It was called a strike. And he's like, oh, look at that. What a pussy.
And this guy who calls Solaire a pussy, the same guy after the Cubs score 5 in the second disappears.
Oh, yeah. He was gone.
Vanishes. Never heard from again.
Into thin air. Yeah.
And so, he was talking. I mean, after the Carpenter home run, he was just on his game. I think it's like he had written stuff down. He was really there to piss off Cub fans. It was that guy, you know. He was not there to watch the game. He was there to like yell and piss us off. And then as soon as that happens, he's out.
Yeah.
And so his tiny girlfriend that I was blocking the view of the whole time intentionally.
It's TBS said that Solaire needs to work on being stronger. No way. Somebody just said that. Chris said that in the chat. But after he went back to resume his at-bat, after the thinking he had a walk, isn't that when he hit a double, Corey?
Yes,
and then I don't know if you want to say what you said.
Well, I turned around and at that point I was like, okay, I'm probably going to get punched here in a second. Because I turned around and said as aggressively as I could, like fist pumping in the air. And I said, look at that pussy double. Look at that pussy double.
It was fun. And this is also the same guy who questioned, you know, batting the pitcher 8th. He's like, who does that? You know, he's like,
oh,
this
is
dumb and shit.
So he goes, he's like, this is why batting the pitcher 8th is the worst thing ever. And then Hendricks shows bunt. And the guy goes, what's he going to do? Bunt in a run?
<It's> like, exactly what
actually
happened.
He will. And guess what? Addison Russell will too.
Right after. Oh, man.
Oh, and we were high-fiving our butts off. It was so fun. That inning was fantastic.
Oh, yeah. And then he bailed.
Yep.
Which was good.
Yeah. He said his piece.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I don't know.
But when he called Solaire a pussy, I mean, I was laughing and I turned around. I was like basically laughing in his face because I thought that was so outlandish.
Is that all you've got?
What is like, your really? Disconnect, dude? Your synapses are misfiring, you know? Go check yourself, bud.
But I don't know.
The obnoxious Cardinals fans fell into particular categories that we all know, like under 30 drunk.
Right, right. Dudes. Well, you know, I think if anybody listening to this might think that we're the kind of guys that would go to a park and look for this type of stuff, and that's not the case at all. Like once he left, then I had a lot of fun. Although I was actually about as annoyed with the obnoxious Cubs fans that were near us. I just wanted to really enjoy the game, and I don't like that kind of. I don't even like really like friendly going back and forth. Like that's just not for me. I want to just like enjoy the game, cheer on my team. Yeah. You cheer on your team.
See, I don't mind a little friendly ribbing, but maybe we should point out too that they were Cub Hawkeye fans. Maybe that helps people know who what they were like.
Right. Yeah,
and I live in Iowa City, so
right. No offense to the Hawkeye fans out there.
There was one girl that was basically being the fun police,
right?
And she was particularly honed in on Bob. I really felt bad for Bob. Like she was basically all up in his face for him not being like really vocal about his excitement. I mean, she was wasted too. I mean,
but Andy, are you a fun haver? Are we fun havers?
Yeah,
we're fun havers.
We're fun. That was her way of checking like that we were all having a good time, is asking if we were fun havers. Yes, I can confirm I am a fun haver.
She said to me, she's like, are you a fun haver? And I said, yes. And she said, fun havers don't stand with their arms crossed. I said, well, I'm kind of keeping my hands warm and I'm watching a baseball game. But
I told her at one point, I was like, hey, I've known this guy for a long time. Like he's been a Cubs fan forever. Trust me. He's excited now. You know, just please.
Oh, man. All right. Let's move on. Okay,
guess so here's the game.
My yeah. Oh, there was a baseball game.
Right.
There was a baseball game.
Yeah, we should talk.
Right.
About
here's my question for you guys: was Game 2 a must-win for the Cubs?
Absolutely, I think.
I mean, I could have asked you that before the game, but
yeah. Well, we did kind of chat about it, but I mean, not technically. Yeah, you know, they could have lost and still been alive, but yes, it was. I mean, if you're going to win the series, you need to take one in St. Louis.
So. Right. By not winning,
it really sets the table for them.
Right. By not winning that game, you're going to essentially have to sweep the Cardinals in a 3-game series, and one of those being on the road, and one of them with Hamill or whoever.
Chris P in the chat says that, you know, makes the point that so is 3 and 4. I mean, I wonder what you guys think about that. I kind of think 3 and 4 are basically must wins too, but I think that the table is set for them. I mean, I think that the ball's on the tee and the Cubs just have to hit it now.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
As far as winning the series.
Yeah. I also felt that game 2 was a must win for the Cardinals. Because by not winning game 2, it completely flipped the texture of this series. Not only did they kind of lose any momentum that they had, but at the same time, they got beat by Kyle Hendricks. When they had a pitcher that they felt pretty confident about. So you have that, the fact that you lost a matchup, you probably should have won. Now, if you look at the series, if you throw out the first two games, the Cubs now have home field advantage. They have 2 out of 3 at home. Mm-hmm. And in 2 of those games, they have Lester and Arrieta. So I think that the Cardinals needed game 2 almost more than the Cubs did.
Yeah. And I think that's just, you know, this is a byproduct of these short series. I mean, every game is pretty darn important in a 5-game series.
Right.
And it's even more important for the home team. So, yeah, I agree with you that it was kind of a must-win for both of them. And it was nice that the Cubs picked it up.
Right.
But to see the way that the Cubs knocked Garcia out of the game was incredible. Yeah. I mean, the combination of small ball and then the home run was just the best possible combination for my enjoyment.
And how many did he get? Did he only go 2 or 3?
I think it was 3, wasn't it?
Yeah. But either way, I mean, you could tell he was so flustered. He had the defensive error. He looked just not comfortable at all. And that was pretty great to see. Because then we talked about how, like, you know, the game plan versus game 1, the game plan went out the window with the big strike zone. In game 2, the game plan worked perfectly. Like, you make the guy throw a lot of pitches, you get in his head, that all worked.
It was so much fun watching the pitch count. once we found it with all those signs, once we found it, it was really fun to watch it. Yes. But what stood out to me too is how loose the Cubs were in all of their pregame stuff. If this was a must win for the Cubs, and I think you can make that case, they did not act like it was a must win game. I mean, you look at like when the relievers walked, you know, right at game time, when they walked from the dugout out to the bullpen, Grimm was out in the outfield swirling around a pink backpack over his head to that "Turn Down for What" song. He's out there dancing in the outfield. And like, they're all just walking loose. You could tell it was so loose. I mean, like, Rodney punted his glove mm-hmm. over the bullpen wall. I mean, they looked like they were having fun, and they looked totally loose.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was even tiny things, like, you know, somebody from the bullpen will come out and warm up the left fielder, you know, between innings, and like mm-hmm. Hamill was out there at one point, and you know, he wasn't pitching, but like, Hamill's playing catch basically. He's like applying fake tags as if he's a second baseman in like the 8th inning as he's warming up, you know, just little things where like, they just weren't, you know, they didn't seem stressed, they didn't seem worried.
No, and that second inning helped a lot with that. I mean, as the game went on, but I mean, even just before the game, watching them warm up, even watching like Bazio was out there, and he was like, Bazio, I forget what song they were playing, but like, Bazio was dancing to, like, I don't know, that Whip Nene song or something like that. I mean, he was dancing. I'm like, man, those guys are just like, here I am about ready to vomit, and I'm like, you know, trying to not like pace like an idiot in front of people. But apparently Jonah didn't like the visual of Basio doing the whip nay nay.
I don't care for it that much either.
Oh man. So we kind of talked about that second inning. But let's kind of go back before that. So the Cubs wasted a Soler double, you know, his you know what double, in the first inning, and then they left him stranded, and it felt like on Friday the Cubs really couldn't take advantage of anything, and they didn't have very many opportunities on Friday, but they couldn't take advantage of them, and it felt like, oh man, okay, here we're starting off good, you know, a good solid base hit, and then we leave him stranded. We can't take advantage of it. And there was only one out at that time. And then in the bottom half of the inning, Hendricks gives up a leadoff home run to Carpenter. Man, that stadium was rocking. I mean, it was, man, they make some noise.
The towels
they make
flying.
Some noise down there. But it was fun. But then the top of the second happened and that did take them out of the game a little bit. So Kurt, why don't you just kind of like, for anybody that has forgotten or wasn't able to watch, just kind of like remind us what the top of the second, that all happened.
I'll just kind of quickly take you through the play-by-play. So Starlin singles, so yeah, we're all hyped up. Austin Jackson, gets a ground out, which we're like, oh crap, here we go. But then there's an error, so
it was Peralta's
error. Long?
Peralta.
So then you've got what, first and second? Some of this I'm doing by memory. I'm trying to find the actual play-by-play. And then Miggy's up. There, I just found it. So wait a minute. Was Castro?
This was like a very long part of our drive home. Is me and Bob trying to piece together the second inning and how it all happened? Yeah, we were trying to figure out like how it happened.
All right. The rundown. Sorry, I should have done this before. Jackson forces into the ground out. Peralta to second for Wong. So Castro's out at second, and Jackson advances to second on the throwing error. Right. So then Jackson steals third.
Right.
While Montero walks, so you got first and third. And this is where our friend behind us says, "What's he gonna do? Bunt in a run?" And then Hendricks bunts in the run on the error by Garcia. And that was the play where Garcia looked like, you know, a little leaguer. He fields the ball and he checks to third. And then by that point, it's like he's so flustered and tries to get the out at first. And
right. I think he looked at first and then turned around and looked at home. And then by the time he went back to first, it was too late.
Much. Then you've got that run in. Russell on the next at bat sack bunts in Montero. And then
didn't I even say before that, wouldn't it be funny if they had Russell bunt?
Right, because again? Like Montero is not a guy that you would expect like a squeeze play. Yeah. Like it was just so unexpected.
And then Russell puts a perfect bunt. That was incredible.
Right. I want to stop on that for a second because that's something that Bob and I were talking about on the way home is how, first off, Joe Maddon just manufactured those runs. And Bob pointed out that one of the reasons that those bunts were so effective was that both bunts went to the first base side. And that forced Garcia, a lefty, to either glove it and spin or to try to barehand it. And it was really important that those bunts went to the first base side.
Yeah. Yeah. And at that point, I mean, we're just like pumped that, you know, you're up 2-1. And this is kind of the, you know, just keeping innings alive. Right. You know, you've got two outs, you're up 2-1. You think, oh, you know, we're good. We're in this. And, you know, but then it just sort of keeps going. That's kind of how these innings go. So then Fowler singles and Hendricks scores and you're up 3-1. And then, of course, the Soler home run after that. The two-run shot to go up 5-1. So, yeah, that was that inning. You know, of course, is the highlight of the evening. We're all just like
we were
screaming.
Hyped.
Well, and really, what I found so enjoyable about it was like we went in to the Cardinals' home and played the kind of ball that they play. Like, we played small ball and we beat them at their own game, and we forced them to make mistakes, two errors in that inning. And it was like, it was so much fun to watch, like, Joe Maddon beat Matheny on, like, the style that Matheny and La Russa have done, you know? Yep. And so,
while a Cardinal fan behind us questioned every move, right. Which was the move they have done, like, that's kind of their thing, and he's questioning everything. Like, what's he gonna do? Bunt? Why do you bat the pitcher eight?
Yeah,
you know, it was awesome. The best fans in baseball, so knowledgeable. They know the game, right. You know. They know the game. They've forgotten about La Russa already, apparently.
Yeah. It was just so much fun to have, like, a sustained inning like that where, like, I had basically five or more opportunities to, or, yeah, four or five opportunities to, like, jump and high five and laugh. And it was just so much fun. It was so fun.
It's so great to have so many high five opportunities. Yeah. But I mean, that two run Jackson was the perfect ending to that inning. It was insult to injury in the best possible way. I mean, for the Cubs to score those runs off of the bunts was pretty demoralizing, I thought. And then just to kick them while they were down. I mean, the two run homer then happens. It was just, it got me pumped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Scoring with two outs too, you know, it just feels so good.
In the chat, I'm kind of distracted by the chat. Mr. Smith goes back, says, is that a Saber metric stat? HFO in five opportunities. High five opportunities. Yeah, Fangraphs will be adding that this offseason, I'm sure.
Our batting average on high fives in play, though, wasn't perfect.
Right. So, yeah, that was just, it was awesome. That was a great inning. It really kind of seems like four innings might be Kyle Hendricks' sweet spot. He gave up two home runs in the fifth, and really that got the crowd back into it.
How nervous did you guys feel at that point?
I
was okay.
Yeah. One thing that made me feel better, other than the fact that they both happened as I went to the bathroom, I was coming back and the first one happened. And then by the time I got back to our section, the second one happened. But,
like, right by us.
Right, yeah. Actually, you can see us on TV on that home run, the Grichuk home run. It landed right next to us. Actually, I don't know if you guys noticed this, but it hit a chair, an empty chair, and there was, like, an elderly lady. That was her seat because she just came back right after that. And I was like, oh, man, I'm so glad she was not sitting there. One thing that I kind of was thinking about too is I was like, okay, well, these are solo home runs. And when you're up 6-1, you can give up a couple solo home runs. They still weren't really like stringing things together. Although, I guess if you're stringing home runs together, that's a quick way to give up some runs. But
that's a good point, though, is that Hendricks wasn't walking a bunch of people. I mean, he was pitching from a position of strength, you know, rather than trying to nibble or something.
Well, and I think, yeah, that's the advantage of the five run inning is he can keep attacking good hitters. And if you give up a solo shot, you can live with it. And he gave up two. And then it was like, okay, it's time to.
Right.
But up until that point, he was pitching lights out. I mean,
yeah, he was pitching really well. He gave
up two hits, and one of them was that Carpenter home run. So, you know, through four, he was really, really good. And, you know, to expect a ton more would be kind of silly. So, yeah, I mean, and I kept saying too, and I sound like a broken record, but like as long as Hendricks can pitch with empty bases, you know, you feel pretty good because he's going to give up a few homers. But as long as they're solo shots, we'll be all right.
Yeah. So they go to the bullpen and Wood comes in. He pitches 2 1/3 innings, no runs, one hit. Cahill pitches an inning, no hits, two strikeouts. And Rondon comes in, gives up one base hit. And that was the game. And then there were lots of high fives exchanged. Goodness. Yes. Yeah. Which the nice thing is the bullpen is so rested right now. Mm-hmm. And like Cahill was like so efficient. I haven't actually gone back to watch the inning that he pitched, but it felt like that inning finished fast.
Okay. Yeah, he pitched so well. We're all looking at each other like, do you bring him back out for the ninth? Like,
right. We did talk about that. Yeah.
Dominant.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, you know, Rondon was already up. And of course it makes sense. You bring in your closer in the playoffs.
If it wouldn't have been a safe situation, he would have been back out there.
But yeah, he was so good.
I want to just make it so this isn't a total sunshine and smiles podcast, I guess, is that I am a little bit concerned about Bryant and Rizzo. They both had offers in every single postseason game, actually. Bryant drew a walk in the wild card game. Rizzo drew a walk and scored in game two. And I thought one positive sign is Rizzo did hit the ball really hard that looked like it should have been maybe extra bases down the third baseline, but it was caught on a nice play by the third baseman. So, you know, maybe that's a little, you know, nugget of hope going forward for Rizzo. But
I may
a little be more bit concerned about those guys.
I may be more concerned about Bryant than I am Rizzo. Just because of
I would have probably said the opposite.
But well, go ahead. But I mean, I think Rizzo's had more. I mean, you know, he's had more of these types of situations as far as like, you know, some dry spells and stuff and being able to kind of work his way out of them. And I think you're right, Andy, like hard contact. I mean, that was a great hit. And if he's making hard contact, if he's making hard contact, but yeah, you're right. I mean, well, look at it this way. The Cubs have won two out of the three games and they've had no production from Chris Bryant or Anthony Rizzo.
And I was just going to say that, like, you got two out of three, but a few more to go. And we know they're going to come alive at some point. So hopefully it's in a game where they're maybe some other guys aren't on.
Right. So
it's nice to have their lack of offense come in a couple of wins.
So with the offensive production is not coming from Bryant and Rizzo, let me tell you where it's coming from. And that's the two spot. So here's Schwarber was second in the batting order the first two games. The first game he went 3-for-4 with a home run, 3 RBIs. The second game he went 2-for-3 with a walk. And then in Saturday's game, Soler went 2-for-2 with a home run, a double, and 2 walks. And so in the two spot for the postseason so far, that position is 6-for-8 with 2 home runs, a double, 3 walks, and 5 RBIs in 3 games.
Wow.
It just seems really clear
who
should be starting when you have a lefty on the mound and who should be starting when there's a righty on the mound. I think it's going to be so hard to not start Soler with a lefty on the mound after that performance.
Yeah. I should also clarify, too, that, I mean, I guess I did leave DeNorfia's staff. I was just looking at like the two. I, it just occurred to me. I was like, oh, wait a minute. That's because, yeah.
The two, so Dino, the Dino two did get, starters.
Right. The two hole starters. There you go. Because Dino had one at bat, and I believe he struck out.
Yeah.
But one more thing on this game. I mean, did you guys, I kind of wanted to talk about more of a big picture thing with this game.
Yeah, sure.
And I think this is one of my takeaways from this game. Late in the game, the Cardinals were down 6-3. So it's after the two back-to-back home runs. And if you looked at fans in the crowd, especially when the Cardinals were batting, you would have thought that score was reversed. Us Cubs fans, we were a nervous bunch. We were nervous about the bullpen. We were nervous about who the Cardinals had coming up. We were nervous about everything. And Cardinals fans were loud. They were loose and they were having a good time. And I can't blame Cubs fans for being nervous. I was nearly sick. I was so nervous. But I was confident in the Cubs. I felt nervous and I was trying to figure out why I was so nervous. Like, why was I so nervous when really I was really confident that the Cubs were going to finish that game. The bullpen had looked good. The Cardinals hadn't really done anything. I mean, I was fully confident that the Cubs were going to win that game, but why was I so nervous? And I mean, we were like counting outs, you know,
but you were counting.
I was counting outs, but
I was counting them too, to be fair.
I kept telling you to stop. You just kept going.
Right. And that's the thing. Like, you were nervous because I was counting outs. Like,
exactly. You're the guy.
Right.
We were talking about.
No, but here's the thing. Like, we have seen our team blow leads. We have seen the Cardinals come back and beat the Cubs. We've seen it this season. And in my head, I know that this is a different team, a Cubs team right now. Yeah. I think it's different than even earlier in the season, but I was still freaking nervous. And then I thought, like, why are Cardinals fans so loose? They're down 6-3. Well, they've seen their team come back in almost every situation that they've ever been in. And and I don't know if you guys noticed this, but the Cardinals reinforced that heading into the bottom of the ninth by showing a video on their big board with all of the late inning heroics in the playoffs that this team has had in the last like 30 years or so. And most of these were recent. And Cardinals fans did not leave that game because they know better. They know their team can come back and win. And what I guess what I took away from it is I really look forward to the day when we have experienced and witnessed enough of that type of success that Cubs fans can loosen up and truly expect success, not with our heads, but like with like full body. We expect it. You know what I mean?
No, I do. I have a bit of a different take on it. Well, I have a little different take on it. Partly probably because I'm a bit newer Cubs fan than you guys. Like, you know, this hasn't been a childhood thing for me. But the other side of it is like, you know, they call themselves the best fans in baseball, but to me that's just ignorance, because no matter what team you're rooting for, that's what makes baseball so great. Like any team can rally, like the worst team can rally against the best team. So to me that's just baseball knowledge. That's just us knowing that like with 9 outs to go, any team can come back from 3 runs.
Right.
And so a lot of people want to pin like, oh, it's history, it's curses, it's whatever other BS that it might be. But the reality is like, it's baseball. Like that's what happens in baseball.
Right.
And yeah, the Cardinals show a video about it, but you know, they have a bunch of World Series. So if they lost, they'd be like, well, whatever, you know, they're like your grandpa. Like if something great happens, you act like you don't care. If something bad happens, you act like you don't care. You know, it's like old crotchety people. And so to me, it's baseball knowledge. It's knowing how the game works and that these things can flip on their head in an instant. So maybe we're just going to claim that we're the best fans in baseball.
Well, here's what I think it is.
We know the game better.
Here's what I think it is too. They can call themselves the best fans in baseball, and it's easy to be fans of a team like theirs and the success that they've had in the last 10 years. It's easy to be the best fans in baseball when that's your experience. Yeah, yes, you're going to have very positive fans towards their own team because look at the success that they've had. You know, if the Cubs have success for the next 10 years, overall, the fan base will be much more positive and probably just a better fan base. I mean, there's going to be a lot more casual fans and all that kind of stuff. I don't know where I'm going with this, but my point is that it's easy to be a Cardinals fan. It's really easy. And
the idiot who like, okay, so at the end of the game, we're all just freaking out celebrating as we should be. And the idiot Cubs fan who walks by and is like, act like you've won before. Well, guess what, idiot? We have not.
The Cardinals fan.
He's walked by the Cubs fan, said this.
Because we were like,
and it was like, no, we haven't. I mean, sure, we've won playoff games, but
not really.
We have not experienced a playoff win. And so, no, we're not going to act like we've won before. And number two, how do you act like you've won before?
Right.
We just want a playoff game. What are we supposed to do?
Right. We're
just
standing
walk
around
quietly out of the stadium. No.
Exactly. You know. Because what would they have been doing if their team would have come back and won that night? They would have been jumping around and high fiving like we were. And so, yeah, I mean that stuff's just so stupid. But
yeah.
Anyway, but I don't know. I think that as a fan base, this season has done a lot to kind of start laying the groundwork for us to get to those places, you know, especially with all the walk-off wins and the comeback wins. But we haven't seen those things in the playoffs yet. And when we start seeing those things in playoffs, like that's when I think that's when maybe our like sick to our stomach, like literally about to vomit, like what can I vomit into and not lose my place right here? Those feelings will start going away, I think.
You mentioned all the walk-off wins, the 13 walk-off wins in the regular season. Something, you know, a streak like that. I mean, I'm sorry, just a number like that can help turn the tide of fan thinking.
Right, yeah. Okay, so... go ahead, sorry.
Oh, that's all right, go ahead.
I was going to just move on from the game. Was there anything else you wanted to talk about?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, so then we leave. And we're driving, and we decide that we want to eat somewhere. And so we stop at a gas station / Subway / McDonald's. And Kurt, I'll kind of let you take the lead on the story because. Hold on. Let me tell you my part of it first. So I'm walking into the bathroom and this guy walks out and he has like these like tags on his like sticking out of his pocket and it's a truck stop. And so I thought they were like, they look like hazmat tags or something like that. Like I saw him and I was like, oh, those are kind of weird.
Diamond shaped thing.
And he looked at me and kind of like gave me like a, like not just passing, but kind of like a head nod. And I was like, oh, hey, you know, and I go into the bathroom. So then I'll let you take over, Kurt.
Okay, yeah. So I was behind that point, you know, I was heading to the bathroom myself. And this woman came out of the women's restroom and she smiled at me and was like, she just looked really friendly. And I thought, oh, you know, must be a Cubs fan. I kind of smiled and was like, oh, hey. And then I go see her talk to what I assume was her husband over at the Subway. He's like, hey, you want Subway? And I'm like, oh, that voice kind of sounds familiar. And I look back and he looks at me, make eye contact. And I look away and then I look back again and he looks at me again. And it was one of those moments where like he realized that something clicked in my head, but it hadn't dawned on me yet who he was. So then I just went on to the bathroom and I was like, I said to Corey, I was like, that guy looks like Coomer. Like, I think it's Coomer out there. And Corey's like, no, he'd be on the plane. Like, why would he? He was not going to be at some random truck stop. Right. So it was kind of like, oh, yeah, you're probably right. Like, why would he be here? Anyway, so I go on to, you know, do my business, which took me a while. And then I'm in the bathroom and Andy's wife comes over to like the front of the bathroom. These are the bathrooms without doors on them. And she's like whisper shouting into the bathroom. Kurt, you got to come out here. Coomer's here. I'm like, oh, it is him. And so, you know, I finish up and wash my hands. Ron, if you're listening, I wash my hands and I ran out. And we met him, and of course, you guys are standing there, and he was, you know, ordering his sandwich, and we were waiting patiently for him to finish so we could get our picture. But of course, it was Coom Dog.
So after he said that, I kind of walked by and I looked at him, and I was like, "Wow, he does look like Coomer." And so I kind of stopped for a second, and his wife looked at me like she kind of had like a big smile on her face, and I was just like, "Are you Ron?" And he's like, "Yeah," or his wife goes, yeah, he is. And then he's like, yeah, I am. And I was like, oh, hey. I was like, oh, wow, it's really nice to meet you. And so we talked for a few seconds. And then like Andy walks in, I'm like, Andy, it's Coomer.
And when I shook his hand and I said, and this wasn't a lie, I said, I've enjoyed your work this season. That wasn't a lie. If I were to be really specific, I could say I've enjoyed your work this season, not necessarily your play-by-play so much, but I really, by and large, as a whole, I have enjoyed his work this
season. Yeah, me too. Yeah.
And they'll throw in there, like, he absolutely could not have been nicer.
Oh, my gosh.
He was, like, so nice. I was sort of surprised.
He seemed genuinely excited that we recognized him. And, yeah. Like, he kept... So, like, I said, oh... can we get your picture? But like one other guy, he's in the restroom and he was like, oh, okay, I'll just wait. And he goes, well, we can do it now. Like I'll wait. Like he was going to wait before he ordered or something like that. And I was like, oh no, go ahead. Like we don't want to slow you down. He's like, oh, it's okay. And so then he orders and stuff. And then like Bob walked in, he's like, is this the guy? And I was like, well, no, but he can be in the picture too. Like, I mean, he's not the guy we're waiting on.
Funny. And then, of course, I finally come out of the bathroom. I hurried. But I did it as fast as I could.
A lot of people in Coomer's position, you know, with his level of notoriety, which, I mean, you know, it's not like, you know what I mean? But, I mean, like, with his level of notoriety, could have acted all put out and stuff. But, you know, like, I really want to get my cold cut trio or whatever. Leave me alone. And he was super nice about it.
Yeah.
I don't know what sandwich he ordered.
Yeah, I didn't see either.
He was like super, super nice, very friendly, like very, very nice. And it was pretty cool. His wife was super excited too. And then he's like telling us the story. He's like, well, my wife was there and she really wanted me to drive home with her tonight. I was like, oh, okay.
I could have gone on the plane, but
we're driving home and here I am at a Subway. No, he didn't say that, but that's what he was thinking probably. But wow, I'm eating Subway at 9 p.m.
So if you like our Facebook page or Twitter, Instagram or whatever, I put that picture and Beth posted it for us too. Put that picture out there. So it's pretty cool. The picture turned out pretty good. So It was nice. He was a super nice guy, and man, he's got some strong hands. he has some large hands. I'm just gonna leave it at that. Okay, so man, this has gone longer than I thought it would. Okay, so let's look ahead to game three, which is Monday afternoon at Wrigley, Waka versus Arrieta. Andy, how has Waka been recently, and how have the Cubs done against him this year?
Well, here's some fun news, is that the Cubs have done really well against Waka this season. He's had four starts against the Cubs this season, and he's 1-2 with a 6.86 ERA in only 21 innings. So out of 36 possible innings for those four games, he's only pitched 21 out of those 36. The Cubs slash line against him is 301 batting average, 376 on base percentage, and 542 slugging. Cubs have 25 hits off of him in those 21 innings, 16 runs and 10 walks. So basically he's only had one good start against the Cubs this season out of the four, in which he gave up only one earned run in that one good outing. But, and all this is off of a guy who is 17-7 in the regular season with a 3.38 ERA. So he's been great for the Cardinals as a starter this season, but his one, the bane of his existence this season has been the Cubs. So that bodes well for this game.
Yeah. And a little preview to the next game, but Lance Lynn has been even worse against the Cubs. So Here's a little preview for you. So then Arrieta, we know he's damn good. We don't need to tell you how damn good he is, but how damn good has he been against the Cardinals, Kurt?
Well, he also has faced the Cardinals four times, like Waka has faced the Cubs. He's 2-1 with a no decision, and that no decision, the Cubs lost that game. It's important to note that all four of those matchups have came before the All-Star break. And Arrieta was a different pitcher in the first half than the second half, but still pretty good numbers with that 2-1 record. The May 7 start against the Cardinals, so you can obviously look how far back we're talking about. May 7th was probably his worst of the year. He went only 5.1 innings and gave up 9 hits with 4 earned runs, which I think it's also important to note here that Arrieta never allowed more than 4 earned runs in any game all season. So, like, worst start of the season against the Cardinals, 9 hits, 4 earned runs. His ERA topped out at that point at 3.41, and that was on May 7th, and just went down from there, as we know. And that's when all the, the good stuff happened, after the All-Star break, and he really turned it on. So, I think these numbers are going to be pretty skewed based on his performance in the two halves. But like I said, these are still pretty good numbers we're talking about. The Cardinals hit .229 against him, which is probably a lot. I didn't look up the second half numbers against other teams, but that's, I know versus the Pirates, when we looked at that game, it was like .151. So it's a little higher than normal, but still pretty good. So, all told, I think, Arrieta being as dominant as he's been, we don't have anything to worry about. He hasn't faced him for a long time, but, on paper, this game's pretty much a lock. But as we know, this is baseball, so
right.
we'll watch and see.
Right. I mean, I kind of look at it a couple ways. I look at, the Cardinals have not seen Arrieta at his best. And so, look, the Pirates did see him a couple times at his best, and in the wild card game, they still couldn't do anything against him. So I kind of look at it that way. But then at the same time, it's like, I don't want to mean to be like a negative Nancy or anything, but like Arrieta will have a bad game at some point. I just really don't want it to be tomorrow.
I don't know if I agree with you there. I mean,
well, he's
maybe next year.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm hoping for.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm fully confident. I mean, in the fact that he could finish out the postseason without having a bad pitching performance.
Right. And he could have at most, five more starts, if the Cubs go to the World Series, when the Cubs go to the World Series.
Right.
So I could easily see him just finishing out the season on 5 good starts.
Yeah. Well, and another reason that I think that it maybe tomorrow won't be his bad game Monday, for I guess for anybody listening on Monday, I don't want to confuse you, is that he's working on normal rest. We haven't gotten to the point where maybe they start using him on short rest or anything. This is normal rest, and we've seen what he's done. I mean, pff, it's hard to picture him having a bad game tomorrow. And mm-hmm. and another thing too is like, okay, yeah, this is the playoffs, so it's different. But it's a playoff game at Wrigley, and he had a playoff game at Pittsburgh. And although Andy doesn't believe it, I believe that he was a little bit rattled in that game and did not look as sharp as he had, and still only gave up 4 hits and shut out. You know, pitched a complete game shutout in a game where we thought he didn't look quite as sharp as usual. So I think the crowd's not going to get to him tomorrow, or I'm sorry, Monday. So I'm real confident in it, and that's what another reason I think, like I said earlier, the game 2 was a must win for the Cardinals. They had to take those first 2 games, because now, as I was on Channel 8, it'll be on Sunday night. But I was on with John Marks again, and he said something about, and I don't know if he said it on the air or off the air or whatever, but he's like, yeah, the Cardinals are going to run into a buzzsaw tomorrow, and they're going to lose. I was like, oh, good. I'm glad. I'm glad to hear Cardinal fans say that.
Well, that's an easy prediction for them to make. Then if you beat them, it's like, oh, look how good we are. But if you don't, it's like, Dolly Jake
Arrieta. Oh, my God. Could you imagine Cardinals fans if they beat Arrieta?
Oh, man.
Oh.
Insufferable.
Well, we know it's not going to happen, so we don't have to worry about it.
Right, right. And I think the crowd will benefit him. I think Wrigley's going to be an absolute madhouse tomorrow. And if you're listening to this and you're going to the game, man, just make as much noise as you can. Make it as miserable for the Cardinals as you can. Because I plan to do that on Tuesday. I'm not traditionally like a yeller, but you know, like where we were in St. Louis, I didn't really feel like me yelling had any effect on you know, the players or anything like that. But Andy, Kurt, you got Andy and I pretty good seats. So I'm hoping like maybe our yelling would have somewhat of an effect.
Yeah. Let's hope so.
All right. Scary stat. Do you have a scary stat tonight, Kurt?
I do. And this one is, thanks to you, Corey. And it's a darn good one. In the 3 playoff games that the Cubs have played, Cubs pitching has struck out 31 and walked 1. One walk, and that came from Lester. None yesterday, even though they had to go to the bullpen, they were absolutely fantastic.
Yep.
Just gave up a couple of hits and no walks, and I think, you know, that's key. You just don't, you can give up those solo shots, and as long as nobody's on base, you can live with it. So, yeah, it's pretty incredible how good the pitching's been so far.
Yeah, that's amazing. Let's keep that rate going. Just throughout the offseason. That takes so much pressure off the defense and everything. Like when you just don't give them free bases, look at the difference it makes. That's the difference between back-to-back solo home runs. You know, that's the difference between solo home runs and like 2 and 3 run home runs, is when you just don't give them free bases. And it's especially important for, you know, we talked about this before, but if it goes to a game 5, that's important for Lester, because he struggles with keeping the runners at first base. And so it really helps all the way around. I mean, makes a big difference if you look at the difference of a 2-run shot, say that first home run, who was it? Piscotty, I think, that hit the first one. You know, it makes a big difference. So I like that ratio. All right, that does it for this episode. We will be back with a post-game show after Monday's game. It'll be broadcast live, so follow us on Blab. That's the service that we use for our live stuff. It's a free app on iPhones, on iOS. It works great. You can also watch from the Blab website. It's blab.im, and it's a lot of fun. And total, we had like 300 people for the wildcard post-game show, so that was a lot of fun. And you'll be able to find the link at ivmv.com/live right after the game. Go there. You can follow us on Twitter at ivmv. We tweet it out. And on Facebook, we are ivmv.com/Facebook. This episode is brought to you by all 111 of our Patreon supporters. And if you are enjoying these postseason episodes and you want to support our year-round coverage of the Cubs, you can do so through our Patreon campaign. You can pledge a monthly amount. It starts at $1 a month, just pocket change. It helps us pay the podcasting bills and keep improving, helps us keep improving things. And we want to thank our new contributors. Michael in San Diego is now a Hall of Fame level contributor. And thanks to Donnie from Columbus, Georgia. To check out the Patreon campaign and the perks that you can get at all the different levels, go to patreon.com/IVNV. That's patreon.com/IVNV. So we will be back Monday night with the Game 3 post-game show. You know, sit back, have fun, and if you're going to be at Wrigley, make it loud, make it miserable for the Cardinals players. And until Monday night, go Cubs.